Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Stacy Waite. Stacy Waite is the author of three poetry chapbooks, including The Lake Has No Saint, winner of the Snowbound Award from Tupelo Press. With an MFA and PhD from the University of Pittsburgh, Waite now teaches courses in writing, gender studies, and pedagogy at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Her new full-length collection, entitled Butch Geography, was just released from Tupelo Press. Hi, Stacy. How are you?
I'm doing really good. It's good to be back in Pittsburgh, back on Prosody after a number of years. Good to be here.
Yeah, it has been a while, and I'm really, really happy to feature Butch Geography. Congratulations on that.
Thanks so much. It's been a long time. I've been trying to send that book out for a long time. So
it has been, but, even sweeter now. So please, you're going to read from Butch Geography.
I am, yes, okay. Indeed. The first poem I'm going to read is called The Kind of Man I Am at the DMV. Mommy, that man is a girl, says the boy, pointing his finger like a narrow spotlight, targeting the center of my back, his kid hand learning to assert what he sees, his kid hand learning the failure of gender's tidy little story about itself. I try not to look at him because, yes, that man is a girl. I, man, am a girl. I am the kind of man who is a girl. And because the kind of man I am is patient with children, I try not to hear the meanness in his voice, his boy voice that sounds like a girl voice, because his boy voice is young and pitched high, like the tent in his pants will be years later, because he will grow to be the kind of man who is a man, or so his mother thinks. His mother snatches his finger from the air. Of course he's not, she says, pulling him back to his seat. What number does it say we are? She says to her boy, bringing his attention back to numbers, to counting and its solid sense. But he has earrings, the boy complains, now sounding desperate, like he's been the boy who cried wolf, like he's been the hub of disbelief before, but this time he knows he is oh so right. The kind of man I am is a girl. The kind of man I am is push-ups on the basement floor, is chest bound tight against himself, is thick gripping hands to the wheel when the kind of man I am drives away from the boy who will become a boy, except for now, while he's still a girl voice, a girl face, a hairless arm, a powerless hand. That boy is a girl. That man who is a girl thinks to himself as he pulls out of the lot, his girl eyes shining in the Midwest sun. On the occasion of being mistaken for a man by the cashier in the drive-through window at a Wendy's in Madison, Wisconsin. When a woman does it, I feel more like a man. Simone at the Wendy's drive-through makes me feel more like a man when she says, "Out of 10, sir," and leans her breasts atop the little shelf at the folding windows, smiles. "You have gorgeous hands," I say. I can't even see her hands, but tonight I have license to compliment, to tell Simone I have never seen more delicate hands. In a perfect world, I wouldn't tell Simone I was an anatomical female until our fourth date. I would include this in the same sentence that tells her my grandparents speak Slovak and my brother is a restaurant owner. And Simone would sway in and kiss my neck and say, "Really, isn't that interesting?" And over dinner with her parents, her father would not forget to ask me about my brother, about whether we could all go out for a free meal. In a perfect world, Simone's voice is a cocoon, an agent of transformation, and Simone is a drive-through queen who gives us all permission to stop dividing like cells, to stop making her leave me on our fourth date and never speak a word about me. And I write a lot of on the occasion of being mistaken for a man poems, but I've also written a couple on the occasion of being mistaken for a woman poems, and I'm going to read one of those. And if you're like, "What? I'm confused," that's good. That's the process you're supposed to, that's the process you're going to go through. On the occasion of being mistaken for a woman by a therapist in the South Hills of Pittsburgh. Tell me again, she says, how you liked being Hansel in the sixth grade production of Hansel and Gretel. She leans in close. You've told me how it feels to be a man. How about how it feels to be a woman? And I remember only how it felt to play the woodcutter's son, the tight grip of suspenders on my shoulders, Lila Henning's small hands as she played the role of my sister, how she pushed Mrs. Gladys, who played the conspiring candy house witch, into the oven. I was a good Hansel. I practiced making the disappointed face for the moment we realize the birds have eaten the breadcrumb trail. It felt wrong to be a woman, wrong when the barista at the cafe says, "Have a nice day, ladies," wrong when my mother calls my underwear panties, wrong when my hair is tied in pigtails. I do not speak the language of women, and the therapist is trying to unwind me. She thinks, of course, that I must know what it is like, that somewhere deep inside me lives the life of a woman, if I would only let her speak. I sit still. I sit like Hansel, locked in his cage. The witch, after all, plans on eating him. If I thought a woman were there, I would go look for her. I am the kind of man who rescues, who thinks to leave a failing trail in the forest. I am the woodcutter's son, unwanted, but finally, after a close call with death, held closely and welcomed home.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Stacy Waite. She's reading from her new collection of poems, Butch Geography. Stacy, you were talking about the process of confusion and how good that is. And can you say a little more about that to your readers who might pick up your book or be listening now and say, well, what's so good about confusion?
Yeah, I think some poets are nervous about talking about their poems as doing political work in the world, or they're worried people are going to say a word like message about their poetry. And I don't worry so much about that because I hope that the poems do work in the world, and that work is connected to confusion a little bit, in the sense that it's really important to me to trouble categories. I feel like some of the rigid categories we use in the culture to think about gender, sexuality, other types of identity categories are part of the production of violence and part of the production of how people try to control one another and defend the fortress of whatever they think is, you know, that rigid identity category. So I spent a lot of time thinking like that about that because, you know, as an androgynous person moving through the world, people are troubled just by my walking into their diner sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's something I care about and something I hope young queer poets, you know, pick up this book and feel like some things are possible.
Right. Okay. I have a quote from you that I'd like to read. It's from your interview with Jennifer Perrine, Pilot Light Journal. And this is you speaking. The truth is that because gender is everywhere, danger is everywhere. And I guess part of writing poems for me is coming to terms with that danger and trying to offer a kind of political, aesthetic, and poetic argument that gender is not sustainable, that it's dangerous to all of us, not merely to folks who fall outside its constructed norms. So you started talking about that a little bit. Can you talk a little bit more about the danger is everywhere part and to all of us? Can you talk about that kind of danger?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way I put it to people is that almost, you know, everyone I've ever met so far, and I feel like I've met a lot of people talking about gender and talking about poems, and everyone I've met so far has a moment in their life that they can point to, whether they're normatively gendered or not, where gender took something from them, or there was a great grief because someone said, you can't do that because you're a woman, or you shouldn't do that because you're a man. And so that gender is already associated for anyone, when we're children even, with grief and confusion and loss and anger and all kinds of things, because, you know, you get to be a certain age and you're supposed to start doing the gender properly. So, you know, we forgive it at age 6, age 7, age, you know, tomboys and, oh, he likes his sister's kitchen, ha ha. But then there's a moment where the culture and the society expect you to grow out of gender ambiguity and grow into a properly gendered adult. And I think that The reason I think that's dangerous, not just for me as someone who experiences, kind of queer phobia from people sometimes, but it's dangerous for all of us in that it takes away parts of who we are because we're moving towards this normative category. And I do think that's kind of a tragedy.
Okay. Can you read some more?
I will. Well, we were talking about, I'll read this poem because we were talking about that violence or people's reactions to that gender confusion or ambiguity. So I'll read a poem about that. It's called, "At a rest stop in central Pennsylvania, a man chokes me for talking to his girlfriend, but thankfully lets me go after referring to me as a Mandyke freak of nature. When he first grabs me, I'm leaving the women's room. His knuckles are locked like fat bolts beneath my chin. My pulse buzzes beneath skin like an old radiator. My breasts want to sink into my sweat-covered chest to become hollow burrows like the ones small animals dig into soft enough, wet enough landscape. And when he loosens his grip, my head is the roof of a burning house. A woman turns her gas cap. It clicks. This is how we know when we've gone far enough. Of course, there's never anything else to do but leave. My car, a burglarized residence, I turn the mirrors face up. I have no wish to see myself, traveling or not. These days, I fuel up before leaving. I urinate on the shoulders of highways, even on the cold and black nights when it spreads around my shoes like a high tide around rocks, the warm steam rising as if it were fog off the riverbank, the yellow haze of it sucked in by the yellow moon. Sometimes I can smell it in the floor mats all the way home." And I'll read one more poem that's kind of in the same vein of that, thinking about a response to gender confusion. For tomboys. When the neighborhood kids realize you are not a boy, run. Head tucked, arm pumping, leg burning, run. Don't hang around the soccer field to see what they might do. Don't wait for any of them to press your body against a tree while the others pull down your pants. Don't wait for reactions, hoping they still choose you as team captain, still share their water. Don't freeze up. Don't urinate in fear or shame. Try to forget scoring your third goal of the afternoon. Forget Shannon Wallace smiling in your direction, how the boys on your team high-fived. Forget that your hands and their hands smacked with sweat like a kind of boy religion. That the soccer field was boy church until the neighborhood kids realize you are not a boy. Run. Run hard. Run through the bushes, no matter how thick or thorned. Run like you're chasing down the offense. Run away from the gold chain dangling from Vinny Aiello's neck, the crucifix reflecting the relentless sun. Run from the burning field. Run away from them circling you in the wooded pines, their fingers, arrows in your pounding chest. Run now for your life. Run. Fixing my voice. When Dr. Reardon says he can fix my voice, he means he will give me shots of estrogen, which will surge through my body like electric shocks and send the hair on my chin and stomach running for cover. He doesn't want me to be warm. He doesn't want to listen to my large truck voice fill his office like the soy milk bursting up from the bottom of his morning coffee. He wants me to be an affirmation. He wants me perched on his plastic table with smooth naked legs, singing hymns in the voice of a woman who needs him in order to recover some piece of herself that has been swallowed by the jaws of testosterone, opening and closing hard like the doors of angry lovers. He doesn't exactly know that he hates me. The feeling is more like gender indigestion, how the sound of my voice keeps rising up in his throat, and he can't rid himself of the image of my lover who stretches out nude in our bed and presses her hand to my chest, saying, "Talk to me. Please, talk." On the occasion of being mistaken for the delivery boy by two members of the Girls' Youth Soccer League at the Marriott Hotel. I am at the door, pizza in hand, like Galileo with the globe. I can hear them giggling from behind the door, their footsteps pitter-pattering. It is probably their first time ordering the pizza alone. Tipping the driver will be a sweet new power for them. I feel the eye pressed against the proverbial peephole. "Pizza guy's here," she says, "and he is so cute." I pull my red Mama Angelina's hat over my eyes, which are far too feminine and blue, and when the door swings open, I am at the gate of a new heaven. I am the cute delivery boy who, after he is spotted by concerned neighborhood fathers, is kept away from daughters such as these. They want me to join them, to pull up a badly upholstered chair to the table and share the pepperoni pie radiating wet heat through its bottom like an engine. I stay for a glorious hour, tell stories about the band I never played in, tell them the guitar has just always come natural to me, I say. I am self-taught, I say. I can play anything you want to hear by ear. Shauna is the one of them I love, her calves carved out like crescent moons as she props her Adidas sneakers atop the television which is blaring Prince's greatest hits on MTV. "Can you play guitar like him?" she asks. And I think on the question of Prince a moment, his small, erotic body, long hair falling around his shoulders like a black scarf. I lie again and say, "I think Prince is a sissy." I never said I played this role well. The truth is, I made a bad delivery boy and felt shame fall over my body when Shauna pressed her mouth against my cheek and called me a hottie. And when she asked me where the band was playing next, I said Detroit. And when she asked me where I was headed from the hotel, I said back to work. The truth is, I played classical guitar on Sundays for my grandmother, who referred to me as her little Czechoslovakian princess. The truth is, I couldn't go back to work. Truth is, I couldn't go home again, either.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Stacey Waite, reading from her new book, Butch Geography, which was just published by Tupelo Press. Stacey, I want to ask you about the writing of the book. I mean, I know you have three chapbooks that came out before this book, and I'm just wondering, because of some things you've been talking about and the shifting nature of gender and how, you know, I wonder how you came to know or realize how to write about gender. I mean, it seems like a really challenging thing.
Yeah, you know, when I was an undergraduate some years ago now, I got to work with the poet Cynthia Hoag, who was teaching at Bucknell at the time. And I was writing a lot of really veiled stuff at the time. Bucknell University is kind of, or at least it was at the time, I shouldn't say I know it exactly now, but it was a conservative place, and I was in a poetry workshop and with students that I didn't know and wasn't quite sure. I'd never read a poem that was overtly queer. I had read, you know, canonical poetry, and I could tell that there were veiled sexual meanings and things like that, but I didn't know that you could kind of just, you know, say things as they are. I had never met, until I met the poets that I was working with, the teachers I was working with, I never met a poet who was alive, who was you know, writing work at the time, who was speaking in a language that I could understand. Cynthia kind of gave me, you know, permission. One day I was in her office hours and kind of was like, you know, "You can write about this stuff." And I felt sort of backed up by her in terms of like, okay, I'm going to write about this stuff. And if the students in the class have a problem with it, you know, this poet, this teacher, this sage, since Cynthia's kind of a sage, and, you know, she has my back, you know. So that was the first kind of brave moment for me, where I started writing a couple poems where gender and sexuality were sort of overtly at the center, and trying to work on those poems. And, you know, I had other teachers and poets along the way that really, I feel like, you know, paved the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, also in terms of structure and in terms of finding that way into a poem, like on the occasion of being mistaken for a man idea. I mean, did it play out in the poems that you would say something and then, you know, because you can't really pin gender down, how do you put words to it? Because words, for a second anyway, pin something down. You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, that's kind of the great thing about a book project is that you can keep undoing the meanings you stabilize, which all the poets I really love, that's what, whether it's about gender or anything else, they do the naming and they undo the naming and redo the naming. And I mean, I feel like that is part of the project of poets, is to call attention to language, to both its constraints and limits and to its possibilities. I feel like, you know, Kate Bornstein, who's a gender theorist I really admire, you know, just says that, you know, anytime we think the names we're coming up with are keeping us less than free, we need to come up with more, you know. Mm-hmm. And I always like that idea, that just to keep, you know, messing with the names and redefining them. And you know, I think that's how we live anyway. I mean, if you're doing it right, I think you're becoming yourself every moment. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we can be aware of that, the more compassionate and kind we can be to each other, and the better poems we can write.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. Okay, could you read some more?
I could, yeah. So there's this Yusuf Komunyakaa poem that I love, where he does this a lot, actually, which is he's able to kind of write a poem that's entirely in the voice of a child. And I got interested in that project, especially in thinking about myself as a kid. And here's one of those poems. It's called Self-Portrait, 1984. Dad tells Mom I'll end up a dyke from playing ice hockey. And my brother tells me a dyke is a girl who likes other girls. And I don't like girls at all. They only play jump rope at recess. And Jackie Wellman smells like fruit every single day. Sometimes no one can keep my mom from crying. I think the frying pans get grease in her eyes when she cooks. So I always say, I don't like anything hot. It's okay to lie about food, I think. When I take my bike on the horse trails, there are towers that make sounds like a baby singing, but the babies are invisible. My dad says no one is invisible but God. Sometimes I pretend the barn is my house. Sometimes I take my bike apart and put it back together all morning. No one knows what I can do. If you won't tell, I'll jump no hands from the hayloft door. I made a house out of boxes in the woods. I could live there if I wanted, if I wasn't scared of the tree limbs snatching me up. My dad says trees are alive, and I think they just might do something bad if they could. In the book, there's the On the Occasion series, and then there's also a series of poems that are letters to gender. And I'll read two of those. Dear Gender, you aren't always pretty. Pretty like a summer's day, pretty like the red of Strawberry Shortcake's dress, pretty like the toss of Jennifer Aniston's hair outside the set of another romantic comedy, bursting up myths of messages made whole, baseball cap to the prom, four-wheeling Sundays in the thick dirt. You say, Lincoln Logs? No. Tonka trucks? No. Emotions? No. Gender, rise out, an exorcism from our too scared skin. Let us make the sounds we were never meant to make. Let us curse. Let us drive. Let us grill steak in the yard. Here I am, gender. Tell me again, the girl I should be. Please, just say it quiet, so no one will hear. Dear Gender, the truth is, I've loved you always. Despite your refusal to play with me, your stage fright, stubbornness, and cruel pranks, you have always been up in tree branches with me, like a sibling. But there were nights, however brief, when you fell to pieces in my lap, tired hands covering your eyes, which were watering. Remember? You couldn't see and almost lost your ground when you tried to stand. So weak you have always been, so simple and strange. This poem's called Penis Envy. They know I am not one of them. The women in single-file lines who grip purses, pulling close to the body what matters most. I am a thief of spaces. They check the signs on the door. They match their reactions to the other women around them. One woman, certain. My eyelashes are a dead giveaway. My mother's hands. Once they belonged to the nuns. Once her left was slapped with a switch. Once her left hand was the devil's hand, the same hand she used when the nuns made her touch the dead body of a dead nun she did not know at the Catholic open casket funeral. Once they scanned groceries at the A&P. Once they held the burden of her father's war. Once they held the fragile tilt of infants. Once earth in my mother's hands. Once black tea. Once my teenage tears. Once her mother's impenetrable no. Once in my mother's hands, nails bitten down. Once this china cabinet cut. Once this island. Once this town. Once this ricochet of sound, this symphony of survival.
It's the poetry of Stacy Waite reading from her new book, Butch Geography. Thank you, Stacy. That was great.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 FM.